This is Cedrus Monty, November 3rd, 2002, Dark Feminine.
And thank you also very much for coming. It seems like this topic is hot right now. I'm sure there are a lot of instances right now that are happening, including November 5th, that the results of November 5th that are going to bring a lot of light to this particular archetypal, to this particular archetype and dimension of the psyche. The first part of the presentation this evening will provide us some common ground to better apprehend the material that will be presented in the second half of the evening. The second half of the evening, we will see slides on Buto, which is a Japanese movement form that grew out of post-nuclear Japan. The first performance was given in 1959. And I felt that it was very important to not just talk about Buto itself, but to look at it from this Jungian perspective from this particular archetype. So you may feel that there's a big leap between the first and the second part, and I'll need you to help me make the bridges between the first and the second part. The more I've read and thought about the nature of the dark feminine, the less I feel I know. There's so much that's coming and so much that needs to be acknowledged. It seems there's always one other facet, one more face to be revealed. And so what I can share with you this evening of my inquiries and my experiences is only introductory, and it's very inconclusive. So for everything that I tell you, there will be something else that is not told, more than that. So I apologize in advance for what might be an incomplete presentation, leaving you hopefully with far more questions than answers. Jung wrote, "The secret is only that which can destroy itself is truly alive." I'm going to repeat that again because I think it's an important... It summarizes this the whole topic this evening. The secret is only that which can destroy itself is truly alive. Does anyone... And no questions right now, but does anyone have a response to that in themselves? What does that bring up for someone? Just brief response. Only that which can destroy itself is truly alive.
I think there's a lot of humility of being down to earth and acknowledging that there are many other things than yourself.
Yes.
The whole thing.
Thank you.
And yet you can feel connected.
Yes. Anyone else? Yes. Suicide is the ultimate self-affirmation. Yeah, it's an interesting one to contemplate. Yes? Yes, that's right. And this is one of the very important things that Jung's work brings to us, is that there cannot be further consciousness without a very strong blow to the ego, so that that shell needs to be shaken and shattered sometimes, not totally, but enough so that something new can be brought up from this very unknown, very deep place. And at the level of the ego, it's very frightening. But it's only when we can do that, when we have the courage to do that, that we can really grow and regenerate and recreate ourselves. Part of my task this evening is to describe the dark feminine to you. And I hope to do that. I hope it unfolds as we go along. And I would like to lean on a poet by the name of Pablo Neruda. I'm sure you've heard of him. And I feel that this poem really brings us to the very core of the dark feminine. He writes, "Sadness, I need your black wing. So much honey in the topaz, each ray smiling in the wide fields, and all in abundant light about me, all in electric whir in the high air. And so give me your black wing, Sister Sadness. I need sometimes to have the sapphire extinguished and to have the angled mesh of the rain fall, the weeping of the earth. I am missing the black light. Give me your slow blood, cold rain. Spread over me your fearful wing. Into my care, give back the key of the closed door, the ruined door. For a moment, for a short lifetime, remove my light and leave me to feel myself abandoned, wretched, trembling in the web of twilight, receiving into my being the quivering hands of the rain." I don't think that there are many of us who would actually invite this, but he says it's important to do so in his writing. In the bittersweet of Neruda's poem, we are reminded of a primordial longing for darker places, spaces where we can rightfully mourn, feel our sadness, our grief, and despair. A place where we can let ourselves experience without shame or guilt the sense of abandonment and wretchedness we encounter in the wake of our wounds, in the recognition of others' wounds, and in receiving the weeping of the earth. We are reminded that this mournful face of God, this shrine of darkness, is a holy place, a place that makes whole and heals. True to the paradoxical nature of spiritual and conscious life, the wounds we bring to this shrine are both the suffering and the redemption. Through them, we are pierced and torn apart. But without them, we would not have the opportunity to forge a forgiving and compassionate response. We would not have the opportunity to make love conscious. That's a quote from my writing. That was an important piece for me, and I wanted to keep that whole and to communicate that. Other cultures, it seems, have really allowed space for this dimension of the psyche, this dark feminine, whatever else it might be called. And apparently, we have not been able to include that in our own culture, our own collective culture, especially on this continent. Other cultures and other times have brought out myths have brought forward myths that talk about this. Inanna is one of the most important ones. The personage of Kali, the myth of Persephone, and Demeter. All of these, as ancient as they are, seem to have arisen out of other cultures and still seem to be part of them, even now existing. But we have a very difficult time in the so-called Western civilized world to really invite and bring in this these experiences willingly and openly. I would say that maybe one of the closest we have to us is in Mexico with Our Lady of Guadalupe, and with a real acknowledgement in the Day of the Dead, really calling forth and acknowledging, setting time apart to be with this dimension, with this part of our lives, this part of who we are. So I think one of the questions is how much longer does the dark feminine have to wait for conscious and willing recognition before it's too late? I'm sure some of you are already formulating some of your own ideas and thoughts about that. It's a very important question to ask. How much longer do we have to wait? In the story of Inanna, Inanna goes down to meet her sister, her darker sister. How many of you know this myth more or less? Not everyone. Okay. Inanna, Queen of Heaven, decides to go down and visit her sister, Ereshkigal, who is the queen of the underworld. And in order to do this, she has to strip herself bare. She has to become humble. She has to take off all her clothes. She must go down in a crouched position. And then when she gets there, Ereshkigal is not very happy with her and decides to hang her up on a peg and let her stay there and rot. And so she dies. So the world is left without the Queen of Heaven. And things stop in the upper world. Things don't grow, things don't move forward. And Inanna has said, listen, if I don't return in 3 days, please, someone, send some help. So 3 days goes by, and she is still down there, and finally someone realizes that she needs help, and two little mourners, M-O-U-R-N-E-R-S, are crafted out of the dirt of the fingernails of one of her father. And they go down to the underworld, and there they meet Ereshkigal. And Ereshkigal is absolutely, she's tormented. And she doesn't give a hoot that Inanna is hanging there on a peg and that there's nothing growing and nothing happening. She is miserable. Ereshkigal is simply miserable. So what the two little mourners do, they were actually the first psychoanalysts or psychotherapists, I'm told. They sit and Ereshkigal moans and cries, "Oh, oh, oh, my back, oh." And the little mourners, "Oh, your back, oh, oh." "Oh," she says, "oh, my feet, oh, I can't bear this pain." The little mourners, "Oh, your feet, oh, it must feel terrible." And so as this empathy continues, as she is heard, as this dark figure is heard, she starts to feel much better, and her own transformation happens. And that happens through Inanna. Inanna is released. The mourners hear Ereshkigal Gal's mourning, and Inanna, the Queen of Heaven, is allowed to come back up to the surface so that life can go on. I have asked the question, what would have happened if Ereshkigal Gal hadn't been heard? What if she had not been acknowledged? And I think this is a question, again, that's for our times. September 11th. I don't want to go too much into that, but I just want to mention, what is not being acknowledged in that, so that the underbelly of the dark feminine has to present herself in the way that she's presented? Death, decay, destruction, all of those things are part of life. But when you're not able to acknowledge that, when you deny it, when you push it away, when you marginalize it in any way, it comes back with a vengeance. And that's what we're facing as a culture and within our own individual psyches. That happens all the time. When we do not allow this dark part to be heard, our own suffering, our own sadness, our own remorse, our own grief, our own wretchedness, it comes up with a vengeance in a different way. Psychosomatic symptoms, accidents, to shake us so that we can hear her, this part, more clearly. She will be heard. What happens often, however, is that the sadness, for example, that Pablo Neruda talks about becomes pathologized, and it's quickly erased from our experience with pharmaceuticals or with other substances or activities. And suffering must at all costs be erased before recognizing it for what it is, a part of life which can often bring us to greater spiritual awareness. Fear cannot be adequately borne. It goes underground and surfaces as a persistent condition, anxiety, or some trauma in the body. Paradox and the creative chaos of a vital life become intolerable. All accounts with the unconscious are categorized, closed, and shelved away. Nothing can be left unknown. Death is no longer permissible. It's not okay to die. And we become walking corpses. Is this ringing true for anyone? Is this... I hope so, to some small extent. What happens also is that when this, the dark feminine, is not acknowledged, I mean, this is 25% of our psychic energy is in this archetypal force. When that's not acknowledged, something erupts. And we see it often happening where people are scapegoated. It's not so much a personal shadow, and I was talking to someone before about this, it's not so much a personal shadow, although the personal shadow is indeed included in it, but it's a whole dimension of the psyche that is being thrust out. And then it lands on a person or a different group of people, and they become scapegoats. They become people who are marginalized, who are not accepted. So if you happen to be a particularly empathic person and you feel these kinds of energies, you might feel that this is all of you. But in fact, part of it is that you are feeling for others what they cannot feel. the distinction between that personal shadow and this rejection of this dimension of the psyche is an important one. And for any kind of therapeutic work or any kind of analytical work, I believe it's very important to first recognize how much is where. How much is personal shadow, and how much are you carrying, or how much is someone carrying for others? And I'll read something that I wrote about that. More often than not, those who are thus overshadowed, those who frequent what I call the shrine of darkness, where you feel so much sadness or grief, or and it's not all yours. So those who frequent the shrine of darkness, making offerings to Sister Sadness, carry or acknowledge something to which a collective remains blind, something that is trying to become conscious through pilgrimage to these darker realms. Those who frequent this shrine often carry a collective shadow. If they are fortunate, they realize that this is the case. They realize that their sadness, their profound grief, is not only personal, but can be as well collective. If they do not have this awareness, those who frequent this shrine may suffer the greater torments of being overshadowed by collective denial and feel that they solely are to blame. The psychic monsters that are implanted and grow in an individual psyche as a result are not to be integrated in a way or in the way that the personal shadow needs to be integrated. Because we are born different from the collective and are persecuted for it is not to be integrated as personal shadow material. Because we have suffered early trauma from abuse and feel responsible for that abuse does not require us to acknowledge blind culpability. After we have recognized the effects of collective denial on our individual psyche, then we can go forward to claim our own personal shadow material. These two, I feel, must be kept distinct. Okay, there's 5 minutes left, and I have a lot more material. So I'm going to end with something, again, that I wrote, and try to pick up a little bit of what I'm leaving behind in the second 45 minutes. Is this all right for you when it's read? Can you... Good. I'm hoping that some of what I say here coincides with some of your own thoughts and feelings. And if not, you can tell me about it after. After years of living life, a life of growing consciousness and simple spiritual devotion, one would think that the path of life becomes easier to navigate, that an inner light will radiate at the flick of a switch. This is not my experience. Nor, I am convinced, is it the experience for many other people of similar circumstances. Only by grace have I been spared the personal and direct experience of horrific traumas, natural catastrophe, personal holocaust and genocide. Yet by the very fact that I am alive and therefore not without wounding, I am vulnerable to the periodic visitations of a quietly eruptive and deadly darkness, to the terrifying chaos of complete uncertainty. Experiences of despair and loss of connection, even after breakthrough life-changing events, extensive analysis, and a profound sense of communion with the forces of nature and spirit, have led me to believe and growingly accept that my own path leads me repeatedly on pilgrimages to the inner shrine of darkness, not because I am morally deficient, not because I am clinically depressed, and not because there is some form of enlightenment or personal maturation that I'm just not getting. Rather, I am led to the shrine of darkness because, in spite of a desire to consistently experience the peace and happiness of a certain spiritual liberation, the mournful face of God exists and wants to be seen and loved through my eyes. It is at this shrine that I've learned to love when I experience nothing to love. So, with that note or that comment, I will close and say that I would like you to keep some of these ideas cooking and carry them over to the second part of the evening, where we will be looking at some images of Bhutto, and perhaps you'll be able to see something there. That Bhutto was not afraid of the dark feminine, and indeed is a way for us to acknowledge it even more deeply. It's very important that we find ways to acknowledge this and to recognize it when we see it. Thank you. Right. I'm going to leave, hopefully, I'm planning on leaving time at the end, about 15 minutes, to try to answer questions that you may have. So if you can hold off until then, please do so. All right, now, I'd like to start with a little exercise that I learned when I was studying Bhutto in Taos with a young woman, Taos, New Mexico. With a young woman who studied with Katsuo Ono, who's one of the founders of Bhutto. He's about, and I think he's still alive. Who's it? Okay. 97, I was going to say 98. 96, okay. I found it to be a very, very provocative exercise. And I'm not going to explain anything about it, but I'm going to ask you to do it. It'll take 5 minutes, and you need your hands free. So the exercise is simply this. You have your hands before you. One of them is closed. It doesn't matter which one. So that they're like this. Okay, so one of them is closed. You will take 5 minutes to simultaneously open the one that's closed and close the one that's open. Is that clear? Simultaneously open the one that's closed while the one that's open closes. 5 minutes. That was about 15 seconds. 5 minutes. If you happen to reach the conclusion before the 5 minutes, start again. But try to make it so that it will take 5 minutes. And just allow yourself to pay attention to the experience and the sensations. And observe your hands. Let them come in front of you together. Observe your hands as you're doing it. So keep your eyes open. And your time starts now. Finding these places, allowing the body to enter these spaces is part of the gift of Bhutto. Like I said before, Bhutto evolved out of post-nuclear Japan, and there was, I am not an expert on this either, so you're getting all the little pieces that I have. So please, you know, forgive any transgressions that I might make out of my own ignorance. I'm sure I will be studying this for a long time to come. As I experienced it after first seeing it and after reading about it, I see it as an avenue that was taken to help restructure an identity out of this atomic holocaust. That, you know, the collective psychotic core had come out into the world and had been perpetrated on one country and one people, and they were left to find a way to restructure themselves, and the rest of the world was too, but they were the ones that experienced it there in their country. Bhutto is not about showing what happened as a result of this, but one cannot ignore the fact that the bomb was dropped, a whole new creation myth had been born, these people had to find, and the whole world had to find a way to deal with that, and Bhutto arose shortly after, in the scheme of things. It was not right after, but it was shortly after. When I first saw Bhutto, I thought, my God, this is it. This is it. Well, what's the it? It was the unconscious being unfolded right before my very eyes. It was the soul of life that was finding its way through the body to be expressed. My first performance was not very long ago. I'd heard about Bhutto since 1980 when I lived in Berkeley. And everybody said, you have to go see Bhutto, 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 Bhutto. And I said, oh, yes, 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 yes. Well, it wasn't until 1990-something, when I was in Taos, that I saw it. The Tamanos, a couple who studied with Hijikata, who is the founder of Bhutto, came to Taos, little old Taos, and had a magnificent performance. And I was enthralled. I was completely enthralled. And I asked God why I wasn't given the opportunity or why I didn't take the opportunity to have gone long before. But there's a reason for everything, so I have to accept that and go from where I am. because it's, I feel that it is a way to work with the dark feminine, and in such a powerful way. And I hope, probably, it sounds like some of you already know a little bit about Bhutto. And in such a powerful way that it really does, and just in observing it, helps us to get in touch with these pieces that are lost to us. with this dimension of the psyche, the dark feminine, and reveals to us things that we don't want to see necessarily. What I'd like to do is not have any further discussion on my part right now, and to show some slides, and I will from time to time read something that has been written by or about, to read some things. They've either been written by the Butoh dancers themselves or people who have studied with them. So, I need lights, camera, action. Oh my God, which way do I go? let me do the first one so I know where I am. Okay. Is it activated? Maybe I won't be reading anything. We'll see. All right. Reverse. Okay, that's why. Sigmund Freud. You have a collected work from Sigmund Freud. Okay. Who is supporting our view of the Butoh? Okay. All right. Now, I won't be reading to you. So, what I'd like you to do, because I can't see, is just to allow the images to sink in. This is Katsuo Ono. He's one of the two main founders of Butoh. And as the woman in the back said, he's now 96 and he's still dancing. He was about 90 in this picture. Butoh revolves around the idea of the dead body into which the dancer places an emotion which can then freely express itself and make the leaps from the first hour to now, if you will. Butoh revolves around the idea of the dead body into which the dancer places an emotion which can then freely express itself. Without this, the living body would divert the emotion, drawing it into its own logic. He tells us that as the puppeteer pulls the strings, the soul should guide the artist. And of this particular dance, Katsuo Ono says, I think everybody has a table that was made for him before he was born. Am I going to go back? Am I going backwards? Okay. If, in fact, one were to remove from their dance both the hardship and the cruelty they endured, very little would remain. I have always danced in a manner where I grope within myself for the roots of suffering by tearing at the superficial harmony. I prefer to go deep inside the person, to lose myself in this body so as to meet with him body and soul. I could, for example, make him unmask himself by telling him, "Your eyes are ghastly, you who have always lived just like everybody else. And this is because you have always been so alienated from your own flesh and blood." Is upside down. Why is this? I think there are some pictures that our slides are not dropping in. It's the problem. We must confront our bodies. Thinking about the strangeness of our bodies or manipulating them through various training techniques is not enough. I think the slides are not dropping in. Pardon? How is everybody able to see that? Yeah. He conducted an experiment called hyperdance, and he danced all across Japan. And he said of this experiment or this project that he didn't dance in the place, but the dance was the place. Jikata, he was the architect of Puto, one of the founders, and one of the he kept Buto alive and vibrant and pretty much contained within his sphere until he died. And then Buto started to change, and there have been lots of permutations on his approach. I mean, even when he was alive, there were, but it has changed and expanded. So there are many different forms of Buto now. But he was the one who really was the heartbeat or the pulse of Buto. I'm a little bit disconcerted because this is also Hijikata.
These are skills. Are
not all, but often and often, but not all, no. And for everything that one really can, my experiences, can say about Bhutto to describe it, then there is something else that will be different about it. It's difficult to encompass in just a very short time, and one has to experience it, of course, like any experiential thing. But because the dark feminine has so much to do, I think, with the instinctual nature of life, our own bodies and nature itself, and because Bhutto involves itself in those very things, I believe it is a tremendous expression of the dark feminine, and for the other reasons that I mentioned as well. It takes an image and allows it to live through the body without the confines of the ego. That's one of the aims, is to allow the ego to drop enough so that the sensation... But I think you've got some idea. I'm very sorry about that. Was that me? Pardon? That was the Bhutto warrior speaking. I would say that it is. I don't know if other people would say that, but I would say that it is. Especially from the perspective of Jungian psychology. But there it also from Buddhism, you know, where there is a real softening of the ego, releasing the ego hold, so that there is something else. There is no body or no one. You know, that one is gone. Katsuo Ono says something about that. He says... He speaks about the freedom of the dancer. This must be understood in the Eastern sense. It does not mean free will, but rather shaking off the confines of free will, liberation from narrow thoughts and individuality. Dancing freely means giving up the notion of oneself, reverting to the original memory of the body, and discovering the soul stifled within. I'm going to open this up now to questions. It's a little bit early, and I'm very sorry about this. Does anybody have any hot suggestions about the slides? So that, yeah. Oh, we should turn them off? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Leave the fan on, yeah. Someone said something? I don't think it's the angle. They were getting stuck in the carousel. They were tight, and I didn't have that trouble last night, so maybe it's just this particular carousel with those particular slides, unfortunately. Okay, yes? John?
A while ago, I was given a brief introduction to the cult of the Black Madonna, which is apparently very active in some aspects in some places in Europe. Is this related to your dark feminine, or am I...
Yes. I mean, the cult of the Black Madonna is really, or the Black Madonna is a physical representative of the dark feminine. And according to Marie-Louise von Franz, she talks about this in her book called Cat. You'll see there are about 300 sites in Western Europe, and there are some in Eastern Europe too. And but mostly Western Europe. And she said that wherever the Romans went, there went the cult of Isis. And Isis was the Black Isis. And so she became the Black Madonna. And, I mean, there's, you know, the talk about the Black Madonna at Einsiedeln. She's black because of soot and all of those wonderful things. And von Franz says, no, she was always black. She was always black. So, what are some of your responses to, because I don't want to just drop this, what are some of your responses to these images in relationship to what we've been talking about from the first half? Yeah.
I noticed most of the slides were of male actors, so we're...
That's interesting, because the ones that we didn't see, they're about half and half.
I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the feminine aspect of the dark feminine.
The feminine aspect of the dark feminine.
Yeah. Or how, yeah.
Why is it feminine?
Why is it feminine?
It's similar to shadow, and shadow is typically masculine. It's similar to
I think that's getting the dark feminine and the shadow mixed up. There's conscious life, all that's conscious, and there's the unconscious. And let me read something to you that might help. I think this is a very good time to read this, and I think Marion Woodman really wraps it up. All right, here we go. This is from Addiction to Perfection, and she says, "We already know God in his outward manifestation, by his laws, his commands, his works. That is the logos, the masculine side of God, what's conscious. What we await in the second coming is what we lack, God's inner dynamic or process. This, God in his creativeness rather than in his creation, is the essence of the dark feminine, traditionally enacted in the ancient mysteries. The return is therefore the emergence of the feminine side of God, which has been gradually taking shape for centuries in what we call the unconscious." She continues by saying, "What we now call the unconscious is in psychological reality a consciousness that has simply been underground for too long. In alchemy, there is the concept of the deus absconditus, the male, the hidden God in matter, but the unconscious also includes the Dea Abscondita, the Black Madonna, or the Dark Feminine." It's not genderized. It's not about gender. It's not about a man and a woman. It's about two dimensions of the psyche. And the Dark Feminine is the aspect that we mostly don't want to look at. So all those things that will, like Ereshkigal in the myth, she's down there holding the fort for the underworld. And she is about those things of death, decay, destruction, things that fall apart, things that are so slow in moving that you feel that you have been turned to stone. The first chakra, the place where the snake energy is coiled, where there is no movement. So these are all dimensions of the dark feminine. It's not about, you know, because you're a woman, you know, that's, or because you're a man. It's not genderized. Does it help? Okay. Yes, because I suppose you can. I wouldn't say that the dark feminine is the anima. There's a relationship there, but I wouldn't say it's equivalent. It's not the same thing.
Would you say that the dark feminine is an aspect of the anima energy?
Yes. Yeah.
Could you define the dark feminine as saying, is first defining the dark masculine and saying it's not that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the active principle of evil.
You know, I have a hard time with the evil part. Because I think what happens is, and I know that it exists, but I think what happens is when these dimensions of the psyche are not acknowledged, when it becomes so polarized, then that's where the evil comes in. Kali is not evil. She is a representative of the dark feminine, but she is not evil. She becomes evil, from my perspective, when those energies are denied. Death is not evil. Death is not, and destruction is not evil in itself. Those things are part of the human condition and part of the psyche. It's when those things, from how I'm holding this material now, when those things are not given their proper place, then things happen. That there's an eruption that happens, and it can feel evil because she is not getting acknowledged. That's why I say, what would have happened if Eresh Kigal had not been heard, if the mourners had not gone down?
And how does this connect to the Night Sea journey?
Yes, yeah, the descent, going down into places that we would rather not go, when we are at the mercy of these greater archetypal forces, this one in particular, and will not let us go. The ego has no control over it at this point. And the journey needs to be made for any kind, like Inanna going down, for any kind of real transformation. Pardon? Yeah, that's right. There's a cyclical process that happens between these, with these energies, and when that process is stopped, then there's big trouble. When the dance is stopped, then Say this again now.
Well, like, you look at these pictures or a dance, and it's like there's not a persona or an ego kind of thing, but it's an emergence of something.
That's right. Yeah. And there's a conscious awareness of it. In other words, it's being invited. That place is being invited. We drop the ego and allow this other, allow the soul to live and have its own expression. And that includes the full range. It's not just pretty.
So the dancer,
all of it.
Is the dancer, I mean, doesn't seem, is the dancer conscious of this unconscious aspect coming through them? Or?
Yes. And when you're really lucky, and I don't know what Hijikata would have said or what any other Butoh dancer would say, but from my own experience, if you're really lucky, you lose. It's not that you go unconscious, but you are no longer moving. You are being moved.
For the first time in my street performance, and for the first time this year, I saw two different street performers at the Fremont Fair doing this, and one of them seemed real odd because they had like a some kind of reptile skull, but then there is this like nurturing action kind of being portrayed through this kind of thing. It's really odd to see. You might have never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a paradox or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of paradoxical material in Butoh, from my experience. Yes.
What I'm struck by is that what you're talking about, will, is making something happen. It's coming from here.
Yeah.
Receptivity, surrender, kind of what you're describing about is about allowing.
That's right.
Receiving. It comes from, it's almost like it comes from somewhere else and through the being, making it both kind of part of the larger collective.
That's right.
Or even transcend it, the collective and the individual. Vehicle.
The carrier, that's right, the vehicle. Uh-huh.
I also want to say it's interesting to see the slides, whereas we did see, mm-hmm. It seems like there's a couple different aspects of Buddha. There's the person doing it and the experience they have,
mm-hmm.
There's the person watching it.
Very important point. But go ahead, finish.
And then there's seeing these slides, which are all frozen.
Yes, yeah.
There's a whole other experience.
Yeah, yeah. From my experience, and I always I have to qualify it, but from my experience in my observing and in my study, a witness is very important. It's part of the process. And when I first saw the Tamanos in Taos, afterwards they came out and they spoke, and someone said, "What was that all about? You know, what was it?" And they said, you are part of this process. It is in part what you bring to it. So there is a real important place for the witness. The witness is part of it. Yeah. Butoh. There are many different translations. The one I like, and it's not a direct translation, but the one I like the most is Dance of Darkness. But literally, or there's something about stepping and dancing, but I'm sure that I see there are a couple of Japanese people here. No? You. That's okay. Yeah. But you will often see it referred to as Dance of Darkness. Thank you. That's right. Yeah. Thank you. That's right. It's coming back to my mind. Uh huh. Yeah. Thank you. Did everyone hear that? Or? Can you there are two words, not just Butoh, but Ankoko Butoh. The first part of that, Ankoko, has been dropped. And that then meant, more literally translated, dance of darkness on Koko Buto. No, it's okay. I know that you raised your hand.
And this distinction between shadow and feminine, dark feminine. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Shadow material, I mean, there is a relationship, but I don't want to say that the dark feminine is the shadow necessarily. It is usually, you know, something that we don't want to, from an ego perspective, we don't want to deal with. So we don't want to acknowledge these dimensions. But death is not shadow material. Shadow material is something that we are not making conscious enough, that needs to be made more conscious in a personal level. Yes.
In thinking that the one thing that shadow has access to that dark feminine doesn't is humor. What's your take on that?
I'll do that again.
That, you know, shadow has trickster. Shadow has access to trickster energy in it, folded into it. So the question is, does dark feminine have access to you? I guess is the question. Pretty important integrated function, you know?
Well, in the sense that the dark feminine is related to paradoxical life, I would say that there might be, you know, some humor. And I mean, I think a lot of humor comes out of paradox. Could be, yeah.
Do you honestly think that Polly doesn't laugh?
Oh, you mean that particular... Yeah, the filmmaker, I'm familiar with him. Yeah. And the question is then...
Well, it's just an observation. And, I find Kurosawa in the West be a carrier of the dancing down. Lots of this stuff is based on Western and on samurai movies. And the honor... within honor of the dying, and that death is part of the good life.
Mm-hmm.
And she's saying very historically.
Well, I think, right, and this is an example of a culture, a way of being in the world that does not marginalize death. I mean, it doesn't say, you know, that if you die, you fail. Or that you've done something wrong. It's part of the process of life. If we're always going forward, if we always have progress, there's no renewal. There's no cycle. The great round is broken. Exactly, yeah, exactly. Both at the psychic and the temporal, the physical level.
I don't mean to be asking too personal of a question, but could you comment on maybe some of the ways that you incorporate elements of the dark feminine into your spiritual practice?
It's an interesting question. Did everyone hear that?
I was just wondering about any correlations between the dark feminine and her spiritual practice. Specifically, you mentioned that you practice Tibetan Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. This gives me an opportunity to read the quote that I had here from Pema Chödrön, who's a Tibetan nun, Tibetan Buddhist nun. And I take great comfort in her writings. And one of the things she says is, if we are willing to give up hope that insecurity and pain can be exterminated, then we can have the courage to relax with the groundlessness of our situation. Shall I read that again? If we are willing to give up hope that insecurity and pain can be exterminated, then we can have the courage to relax with the groundlessness of our situation. I would have to say I practice that almost every day, if I can. If I allow myself to be that aware, if I'm not cutting things off, if I'm not deadening myself. Because that is always there for me. That is a practice. Yes? Yeah? Yeah, that's right, and that we need to embrace that's not a bad thing. It's not something to be pushed away, and that if we can invite that every single moment of our lives, then we have less work to do at the hour of our physical death. That's one way. I just want to make sure that, okay, we have about 5 minutes. Can you bear it? You want to go home. Okay. Yes. 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 When things fall apart, heart advice for difficult times. Good. Yeah, I appreciate that because I think that's really true. It's a big question to answer, but the way in which Bhutto allows the ego to dissolve in those moments that it does and allow the material to come up from, it's not easy to do what they're doing. They're not just faking it. The people who are working in the Bhutto way are not faking it. They're not just standing up there and grimacing. Maybe some of them are, But the way of Bhutto, the way I have experienced it at a very deep level, the intention is to really invite those places that are marginalized, denied, hidden, and condemned, so that your own horror, your own sadness, or just doesn't even have to be personalized, is given space. And that's what we need to do in relationship to the dark feminine. is to give it space. How do we give it space? Where are the places in our lives where the dark feminine has space? That's, yeah. There's no, we have not made room for her, for that, for living that life, for accepting those places. And Bhutto has, not all of it, and you know, I'm not trying to idealize Bhutto in that way, but it goes there.
Part of the paradox, the more verbal we become in us, the more we don't have access to inarticulateness of the pain and the darkness and suffering.
That's right, to our own bodies.
So the Bhutto done in the spiritual discipline is a way of mutely being incredibly communicative.
That's right. That's right. That's how that's my experience. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, at the Pogon Festival, it wasn't this year, was it? It must have been a year before. I'm sure it was one that I saw with Bhutto. I was absolutely mesmerized. Extremely slow movement. That's why
yes.
I asked that earlier.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was used to fast dance in a lot of those venues, and I sat there with this incredible slow movement. Absolutely mesmerized
yes.
by the length of the performance. My question along that, together with that, is there any parallel with the West with mind, like what Marcel was saying?
No. Mime is different. Mime is, again, you know, this is yours from my lens. Mime is trying to find a gesture to communicate holding a cup, finally. And you get it, you know, that there's a cup, and you're going to drink from this cup. Bhutto, is, at the deepest levels, is not at all interested in that. Gesture is immaterial. It's impulse that arises from deep within the sensate unconscious.
But I just agree with you because I am a mind. And, a big distinction is the linearity of it, that mind is still a linear form.
Great, yes.
It still strives to tell a story with the gesture part of the words, and the words are sequenced. Not so abusive at all.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And maybe this will be the last one because I think you guys are good.
In the groups that I do, I noticed that when the topic of the dark feminine is raised, there is a palpable sense of relief.
Yes. Yes.
If you were to tell people ahead of time this is what we're going to talk about, you know, put that out there head on, it might be very frightening, but when it happens in a safe place, there is this relief.
Yes.
My question is, what is to happen to us with this dark feminine being so weary? You talked about...
So what?
So weary.
Uh-huh.
So weary. You talked about eruptions, you talked about a marginalization, scapegoating.
And it will continue. I mean, I don't have the answers, you know, I just maybe am trying to ask some questions. But all that I see on a social, political, cultural level is, I mean, what happened November 5th? What did we do? The whole thing is polarized. We have got, you know, it's leaning into the far right, so that there's no possibility for any, you know, anything that is unknown, unsure, you know, to exist, to survive. What will that do to us? What will happen to us? What will happen to the world? I mean, it's a big question. I'm sorry.
You know, and I was going to say, as we
That's right. Yeah. We have to be brave enough to take some kind of action. Or, and the action may be very small, you know, it may be going home and weeping when you have not been able to allow yourself that. It can be very, very small. It doesn't have to be a big thing. But, you know, we contaminate each other both positively and negatively. We can contaminate each other positively by living out that part in our lives, and then that affects, you know, the large undercurrent where we share our lives with one another. So, you know, when we do that for ourselves, we do something for everyone. Last one. Oh, good question. Okay. Tomorrow, I'm putting together, or I'm creating a vessel, hopefully a good solid one, so that individuals who participate will be able to take an image. It can be from a dream, it can be a psychosomatic symptom that is an image, whatever kind of image they would like to work with from the unconscious, and experience it in a different way through the body. And there will be some technique, there will be exercises to open the body that come from all walks of movement. I mean, I won't be doing all of them, but and including Buto, some techniques, approaches, like to call them techniques, but allowing the ego to drop, finding ways. I mean, it sounds so easy, or maybe it doesn't sound easy, but it sounds it's very facile to say, but very difficult to do. And we have to find ways to let ourselves do it. So taking an image from, you know, your own personal life, from unconscious material, it can be something that came up in active imagination. And letting that image live without trying to make it into a pantomime, but letting it come in through you. Very simple, very difficult. Like one of my spiritual teachers once said to me, very easy get enlightened, very hard stay. And if there are no further questions, thank you very much.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.